The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on the Score.
Do they just look at what they've done with Zion Williamson as he's over the top again?
His best to us is just to live in the moment, game by game, and don't look ahead because, you know, anything can happen. So right now we're just taking it day by day and game by game.
The McNeil and Parkin Show on 670 The Score.
81 points over three ACC tournament games for Zion Williamson, in case there was any doubt who the best player in college basketball was. And he's back and he's healthy, and Duke is the favorite to win the whole thing. This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. Former Northwestern guard, CBS Sports Network, Tim Doyle joins me now. Mac is off today, so I'm flying solo. And I have watched less college basketball this year, Tim, than probably any in the last 15, just because of circumstances, because of Syracuse sucking, whatever the case may be. But I love watching Duke and Zion, and I see them as must-see TV. What about you?
No doubt about it. And I think, Danny, that's why they ended up with the number one overall seed, because eyeball test, when Duke is at full strength, meaning Zion Williamson is healthy, Duke is the best team in college basketball. Now you're going to say, well, they lost to Gonzaga at full strength. Yes, they lost to Gonzaga at full strength in November. Okay.
Yep.
And 4 years ago, Zion Williamson was in eighth grade. Okay, so yes, it's a freshman team that is still getting better each and every time they step on the floor. But I think Duke, rightfully so, is your favorite. For me, they're not going to win at all, but rightfully so, they should be the favorite.
And we'll get to who you think is going to win it all in a second, but who's he the most likable Duke player since? Like, that's a remarkable accomplishment. He makes people not hate Duke.
Yeah, I mean, the stereotype with hating Duke, right? I feel like it's all just white basketball players, right? I mean, like, nobody really hates Grant Hill, right? But, like, Greg Paulus or J.J. Redick or Bobby Hurley or Christian Laettner, there always seems to be a common theme there, huh? Interesting enough. But I guess here's another thing. People just hated me when I played. Why is that, Danny? Why did people hate me when I was starring on a 2-14 god-awful team at Northwestern? Danny, can you answer that question?
Well, you seem like you might have been an agitator of sorts.
Maybe.
Yeah, but listen, you're right. You know, the scrappy white kid who talks trash, right? Eric Devendorf, Aaron Kraft, Grayson Allen, Mike Dunleavy. Sure, those guys get hated in college basketball. But this Duke team, man, they're fun. I'll be sad if they get eliminated. I like watching them.
Yeah, you know something? They got the number one overall seed, but I think their bracket is, like, brutal. And here's why. I got a chance to cover VCU, saw them play live. They're really good. Now, Mike Rhodes is a former Shaka Smart assistant. They play that Havoc-style defense, but it's not full-court pressure. It's more like three-quarters court or half-court pressure. But they defend. Like, Duke's going to win that game, but they're not going to cover. They'll probably be like 8 or 9 point favorite. They are not going to cover that game. Once they survive that, I think Virginia Tech's going to be waiting for them. It's a game that's going to be played in D.C. Virginia Tech recently knocked off Duke, so they're not going to be scared of Duke. They get Justin Robinson back, and they're going to have a ton of fans. That's a huge Virginia Tech neighborhood, that D.C. area. All right, if they win that game again, then you got Michigan State waiting for you. It's like, yes, they got the number one overall seed, but they have some really, really challenging games in front of them.
So who do you have winning it all?
I like North Carolina. Now, I have North Carolina playing Duke, and this is totally the fan in me, Danny. I just want to see that game, because those games they played this year have been electrifying.
Yeah, they've been great.
Great to watch. So is that probably going to happen? Probably not. If I knew all the answers, I wouldn't be on the phone with you. Like, I would just be like in Vegas, just like making like a lot of money and just like hiding it away. So I would love to see that game. You could check out my bracket. You can follow me on Twitter at TimDoyle00. I actually scribbled in Kentucky beating North Carolina, and then I scribbled them out, and I was like, no, I like North Carolina, because I think North Carolina is going to end up having to go through Kentucky, and that Kentucky team is as talented as anybody. It's a freshman team that, once again, Calipari has picking at the right time. P.J. Washington's really extended his offensive game. The reason why I picked North Carolina is I trust North Carolina. Luke May's a senior. Cameron Johnson's a senior. They have guys that have been around the block. Obviously, Roy has done it a bunch of times. Kobe White's a guy that's must-see TV. He's only a freshman. So Duke, rightfully so, is your favorite, but Duke-North Carolina, wouldn't that be a sexy matchup, Danny?
Oh, it'd be incredible. Listen, I'm here for all the matchups or the rematches. Like, if you gave me Duke-Gonzaga in the Final Four on the left side, I'd be in. If you gave me Tennessee-Kentucky on the right side, those were great games in the SEC, I'd be in. Obviously, Duke-Carolina rematch would be great. I feel like the best teams this year, and especially because the ACC is so good, the best teams have all basically played each other, and I'd be fine with rematches with any of them.
I think the big storyline with the ACC is now Virginia gets a number one seed, and I think the top half of their pod, meaning the 64-32, for them to get to the Sweet 16, I have a hard time buying a team that can beat Virginia. I have a hard time picking Virginia. You know, I like to go to the track. I like to gamble. I like to mix it up a little bit. You look at past performances of Virginia, it's the same story. It's like trying to bet a speed horse that can't win. Larry, he'll have the lead turning for home, but he can't get to the finish line. Like, if you take Virginia, hats off to you. Now, they have more NBA players than they've ever had. They're more balanced than they ever had. But I am going to find a way to beat this speed horse that is Tony Bennett's lead squad. And I'm going to go with Purdue. I think Carson Edwards, when he is right, he could put on like a Shabazz Napier, a Kemba Walker-like tournament, and knock off Virginia. And the reason why I don't like Virginia is the way they just absolutely threw up all over themselves in the ACC semifinal against Florida State. Everything that I thought they finally learned, they reverted back to the old Virginia, and they took bad shots, and their execution was bad down the stretch. So if you buy Virginia, hats off to you. You can have that if you want it. I'm not touching them. I don't think they're a Final Four team.
Tim Doyle from CBS Sports Network, TimDoyle00 on Twitter, is our guest. All right, so you got Duke out of the East, Purdue out of the South, North Carolina out of the Midwest. Who do you like in the West, Gonzaga's region?
I know you kind of poo-pooed all over Syracuse, but I think Syracuse can win that game. I think if they get by Baylor, which is going to be an eyesore because both of those teams play 2-3 zone, and Scott Drew, I talked to him last night. He goes, yep, we're going to play 2-3 zone, and we know can Syracuse go play 2-3 zone. So whoever makes the most threes, he said, is going to end up winning that game. And now I have Syracuse advancing on, and now it's just impossible to simulate that zone that Syracuse plays. And Gonzaga's strength is on the inside with Hatsumura and Clark. I think Zach Norvell is going to have to make a ton of threes against the Syracuse zone that is just so hard to prepare for. Now, I did not get into a lot of games at St. John's, all right? That's why I left there. I did start one game, but I did get in at the Carrier Dome against Carmelo Anthony, Hakeem Warrick, the team won national championship. And Danny, I remember standing at the top of the key. I had the ball. And when those guys were fully extended with their arms out, I was just like, where am I supposed to throw the ball? There was no passing lanes. And that's why they play that zone and recruit those players. So you can't even simulate that in practice. I think Syracuse knocks off Gonzaga, and Gonzaga does not see the second weekend.
God, I hope you're right. The thing with me and this Syracuse team is it's exactly like the last 5 years of Syracuse teams. They can beat anyone, but if they don't shoot, they are so bad offensively if they're not hitting their outside shots and they don't really run an offense that they could score 40 points. Like there was a game against Dayton in the tournament years ago where they didn't hit a single jumper outside of the paint until like 3 minutes left in the game, and they lost to Dayton even though they were heavily favored. They're so inconsistent offensively that it's hard for me to get excited about them until they go on a run.
I think they're a very dangerous team. I think that you can make a case for a lot of teams in that region. I know Texas Tech's a team that can certainly defend. Obviously, Michigan has three different chances to knock off Michigan State, but John Beilein's identity in that has changed in Ann Arbor. He used to be an offensive guru. Now he's like a defensive guru. I like Nevada. Now, I just got some information that I was not in love with, that Jordan Caroline is really banged up, because I had Nevada in the Final Four just because I thought they were bored. Like January, February, like those games, they're like, when does March start? This is a veteran team with 50-year seniors everywhere. Obviously lost to Loyola Chicago last year, but I just learned that information about Caroline, that he's not at 100%. But my bracket's already out there. It's too late to turn around.
Nah, you could change it. Who cares? What's an upset? You're a gambler. I'm a gambler. What spreads do you like in the first round?
I'm going to give you a great philosophy here, okay? Yale's getting 8.5 against LSU. Doesn't this LSU team, this is exactly what happened to Indiana. When Kelvin Sampson left, that team was loaded. They had DJ White, they had Eric Gordon. But once Sampson left, it's kind of funny to think about it now, but Dan Dockage was actually the head coach of that Indiana team, and they played absolutely awful, and they got embarrassed by Arkansas. Now you got an LSU squad that has all these guys that are going to turn pro. You think they care about the tournament? Their coach is on the sideline. Who knows where he is, if he ever coaches ever again. I'm talking about Will Wade. You got a Yale team that has an NBA player on the perimeter. It's a veteran group. And you know if Yale gets a lead early, the arena is going to get all behind those nerds from Connecticut and start pulling for them to knock off LSU in that game. I see a ton of upsets. I think New Mexico State is a very dangerous team, and they want Kansas. If they win, they'll more than likely play Kansas. They lost to Kansas by 2 at Fog Allen in a game that the refs certainly did them in. I think New Mexico State's won 30-plus games. They're really dangerous. I think Belmont, the fact that they're in, I have them winning multiple games. When you fill out your bracket, you have to pick upsets. So not all that are going to come to light, but that's how your bracket can break a certain way, because once the upsets happen, now you can get favorable matchups. But I got double-digit seeds winning all over the place.
Man, so you're not a fan of Auburn. They just blitzed through that SEC tournament. They looked good.
Yeah, they look great. And if they shoot 4 of 21 from 3, they're going to lose. You know, like, so which Auburn team is going to show up? You know,
yep.
I always think it's such an interesting thing, and this is hard to kind of put yourself in the psyche of the player, but, like, they go down to Nashville, the SEC tournament, electric atmosphere, fans are going crazy, Kentucky fans, you knock off Tennessee, it's this huge emotional win. Now you're at, like, an NCAA tournament site, the arena is half empty. Like, it's hard to, like, as a player, like, all of a sudden be like, all right, we need to refocus, bring ourselves back to that electric SEC environment. And that's why I think times of games can become really important. Crowds, where are you? Are you traveling cross-country? Like, all of that stuff has to play a role when you're filling out your bracket. Like, last year, DeAndre Ayton was the best player in college basketball. They played a 10 p.m. start time against Buffalo, and they had no interest of being on the floor. And Buffalo ran them out of the gym. Like, so if you could really pinpoint as a gambler those matchups or different storylines and teams like LSU, you could certainly make money during the dance.
Tim Doyle from CBS Sports Network is our guest. You mentioned DeAndre Ayton. He's 16-10 right now in the league as a rookie. And Zion Williamson is dominating college basketball in a way that DeAndre Ayton didn't. And I was noting earlier that all of the comps I hear on Zion are guys from another generation, right? It's Sean Kemp, it's Larry Johnson, it's Charles Barkley. I think he's going to be a 20-10 guy as a rookie because his athleticism will overwhelm, and he's zigging while the league's zagging. He's a bruiser inside who can run and jump and dunk and is crazy athletic, and the league's more of a perimeter spread-out game. How do you think he translates to the league?
Yeah, I mean, just athleticism is something we've, you know, only seen with a handful of players. I mean, I talked to Bruiser Flint, who is the head coach of Drexel. He's a top assistant now for Archie Miller at Indiana. And he said, Tim, I've never seen a player like him before. That's a guy been out of basketball 50-plus years. Like, those are pretty high praises. And so when you start getting those LeBron James comparisons, I mean, I remember when LeBron came into the league, he couldn't shoot.
Right.
And I don't mind that Zion shoots kind of a flat, like, standstill jump shot. You don't need to shoot, like, a rise-up shot. Like, his form's good enough, and once he starts shooting over and over again, yeah, I don't think he's ever going to be like a 45% three-point shooter, and he's going to have to develop his right hand, and he has some other flaws in his game, but, like, he's so explosive in his quick twitch and the way he's able to get to his own misses. I mean, yeah, he's a joke how good he is. Like, it's like, do you remember playing ice hockey, and you could have, like, a fat guy, a skinny guy, or, like, the guy, like, medium guy who was, like, fast on Nintendo? Like, he's like all of those guys combined as a basketball player. It's like, it's unfair.
Yeah, I was saying, and I don't know, it might be hyperbole, but do you think he's the best athlete playing basketball at any level?
That's a great question. You know, they did like a study when LeBron was at his peak, and they said LeBron was the best athlete of any sport, like football, hockey, baseball. They said that he was physically... You know, the one stat that my dad told me, now my dad's 79, he did play in the NBA, but like my dad's like 45% of the things he says are true, like all fathers. So
yeah, sure, of course.
You just got to take this with a grain of salt. He said that if Zion Williamson was in the NBA, he would be the second heaviest player in the whole NBA at 285 pounds. I haven't fact-checked all the weight limits of all the players, but it was like one of those statistics that I was like, ooh, I really hope that's true, but I can't really back it up. And ironically enough, I'm on Long Island right now, and Danny, tonight I'm sleeping at my parents' senior citizen home. So if you wanted me to do like another show tomorrow, you have to call my parents because they take my phone away when I check into the senior citizen home.
Wow. Is everything okay? I mean, do they got a good landline, good connection? What have you on?
No, my dad just bought a strobe light, and I was like, why'd you buy a strobe light? He said, it makes me look more athletic in the bedroom. And, like, I sort of wanted to vomit in my mouth, but then I was like, that's awesome. Like, as you get older, you just got to figure out ways, man, and keep it spicy.
Yeah, they're still getting it in. That's love. Good for your parents.
Yeah. I didn't just show up on a doorstep. I know that.
Good for Papa Doyle. That's awesome. you mentioned storylines. I love sports petty. The fact that Rick Pitino can help his son, Richard Pitino, against the school that he's suing for $44 million is amazing. Like, I'm here for all of the Rick Pitino crowd shots wearing maroon and gold. What do you think of that impact, and does it impact at all, that type of storyline on a game?
No, I mean, the committee definitely did that on purpose. They'll never admit that. And Richard Pitino obviously has close ties to the university. They definitely look for those storylines. I actually think that Rick Pitino is going to be the next head coach of UNLV. And I called a UNLV game this past year, and afterwards, Marvin Menzies, who's a really nice guy, and UNLV has a 3.0 GPA as a team. Nobody cares about that, right? You just want to win basketball games, great kid. Like, he gave a post-game coaches show on the floor, and nobody stuck around. There was literally not one person watching him. You bring Pitino in there, he brings Buzz. Their team's actually really good. They're a bunch of freshmen, sophomores. He'd be the perfect hire for UNLV. I think the best storyline is really like an NBA matchup. John Morant from Murray State takes on Marcus Howard from Marquette. I think two electrifying point guards. I got a chance to see John Morant last year live. I knew he was going to be good, Danny. I didn't know he was going to be this good. I mean, some people say that he might go number one in the draft, which I think is crazy, over Zion Williamson. And Marcus Howard's had multiple 40-point games. It's almost like an NBA matchup. The committee did that on purpose. They wanted the storyline of the two best point guards, and you're going to get it early in the tournament.
Yeah, they should have put the game at night then. I hate that. I'd rather see both of those guys playing against, you know, Goliath schools to get the opportunity to be David and turn themselves into household names by playing multiple games in the tournament. But now one of them will be eliminated Thursday afternoon. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, what's interesting about the Big East is Marquette got a 5 seed. And Villanova won the regular season, won the Big East Conference Tournament, and they got a 6. You know, it wasn't only a couple of weeks ago that Marquette was ranked top 10 in the country. So, I don't know. I really don't know what to make of those seedings. That seems unusual. It didn't seem like any of the conference tournament championships that we watched mattered. Like, it didn't matter. Like, oh, Cincinnati blows out Houston. Cool, Cincinnati, you're a 7. Like, it seemed like the committee like kind of made up their mind. Like, Michigan State deserved the 1 in my eyes. Like, they played in the best conference. The Big Ten got the most teams of any conference in there. They won the regular season. They won the conference tournament. Gonzaga just lost to St. Mary's, and their only real resume win is over Duke, which is a great win, but that's their only good one. They lost to Tennessee. They lost to North Carolina. But the committee's like, nah, Gonzaga, you're number one. It's like, well, their resume really isn't that great. They had a great year, but they're in WCC. So it's really hard to get into, like, the head of the committee. I think the one thing they did get right is there's a lot of balance in the brackets. You know, you could really sell how difficult each and every bracket is.
Tim Doyle, CBS Sports Network. Enjoy the retirement home. And, you know, if there's a tie on the doorknob, stay out of there.
Yeah, I smell already like Ben Gay, and it's weird, but I kind of like it. Thanks for your time, Danny.
Thank you for your time, man. Enjoy the tournament. We'll talk soon.
See you, man.
All right. That's Tim Doyle, CBS Sports Network, at TimDoyle00 on Twitter. This segment brought to you by Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse. Bone-in cowboy ribeye is back at Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse in Chicago. Taste the richer flavor of our bone-in cuts, from ribeye to beef ribs, all fire roasted and Carved Tableside. We've got Ben Brust coming on in an hour and 20 minutes for more tournament breakdown. Yeah, I wish they would treat it more like a TV show than in terms of actual, you know, fairness when they make out these.
You know, they earn their right to be there. And certainly with Duke and Zion back, phenomenal run here in the ACC tournament. And we thought both Duke, Virginia, and North Carolina were deserving on that one line.
Bernard Muir, the NCAA Selection Committee Chairman, bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. With only 5 home games remaining, the Wolves are making their push to the playoffs. Celebrate the 25th anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia, as well as discounted concessions. For ticket information, visit chicagowolves.com. I think it's time for a small mea culpa. Do that in 30 minutes. Something that if I was critical at the time, that now it's better. They deserve praise. I'll do that coming up in half an hour. I think this year any hand-wringing over the bracket falls really flat. It was a really soft bubble. It wasn't a deep year in college basketball. They went from the RPI to the net rating, so there was more transparency with the types of factors that were going in. NC State released a statement complaining about not getting in. You were in the ACC. You had all those opportunities against quality teams. You had some wins. You didn't have others. The ACC can't have every team make the tournament. I don't know that there's such a thing as a snub in a 68-team field. And then, if the biggest gripe is that Michigan State beat Michigan 3 times, including the Big Ten tournament, but they get slated with Duke, but then you look to what the committee actually has to do, they've got to prioritize geography so that fans can actually get to these games, and then they've got to prioritize that you can't play other schools in your conference in the first round. They've got all of these factors that come in. The only rule is that the top 2 seed can't be in the same quadrant as the top 1 seed. Michigan was the second 2 seed. If they were in the first spot, there would have been a gap with the conferences in the first 2 games, or so they say. There was a travel component also. So they put them there. I get why it sucks if you're a Michigan State fan. Like, I'm not saying it doesn't. That's rough. But if you're going to win the title, you're going to have to beat Duke at some point. I know Izzo doesn't have great success against Coach K, but if that's the biggest gripe, that's a gripe for Michigan State fans only that should be forgotten about by Thursday and Friday. And it will only come up again if, in fact, they play each other in the Elite Eight and Michigan State loses. That's the only way that actually comes up and is a big thing. It's not like they were screwed and snubbed out of the tournament. Obviously, that wasn't going to happen. They won the Big Ten. They got the automatic qualifier. But that's not – so Michigan State should have been the 2 in Gonzaga's region instead of the 2 in Duke's region. That's the big issue. Okay. You're right in terms of fairness, but I don't really care. And I don't think the majority of people really care, and I don't think anyone will care come Thursday. What I do wish – and I know, Shep, you disagree with me on some of this. I wish that instead of geography and conferences and worried about attendance at regional sites, and I get why they do, but they make a fraction of their money from attendance at regional sites. And I know it's not just, they say it's not just about money. They want the band to be able to go and the student section to be able to go and the parents to be able to go and that sort of thing. And I get it. And that matters. And I'm not saying it doesn't. But they signed a $10.8 billion TV contract with CBS and Turner. This is a television show. That's what March Madness is. It's a great television show. And I wish that when everybody says, even if it's not true and the committee won't admit it, but everyone says, oh, it's no coincidence that Richard Pitino and Minnesota gets matched up with Louisville in the first round. Well, that's awesome. Rick Pitino's suing Louisville for $44 million, and his son coaches Minnesota, and Rick Pitino will be at the game wearing Minnesota gear, helping Richard Pitino beat Chris Mack. That's great. That's like an all-time petty Hall of Fame moment. I'm here for it. I'm here for all the awkward Rick Pitino, he's a vampire crowd shots. Like, I am here for it. That's great. But they should do that more. Everyone's like, oh, of course they put Marcus Howard and Marquette against John Morant and Murray State. Why? I'd like to see those teams play other blue bloods so that guys can go on a Trae Young run or a Steph Curry at Davidson run more accurately, and you can have the little guy take down the big guy, and they can actually make a name for themselves. Whereas now at this point, Marcus Howard or Ja Morant are going to be eliminated before people get out of the office on Thursday afternoon. So you've got Murray State's a 12 seed. Marquette's a 5 seed. And then in the South region, you've got Wisconsin as a 5 seed and Oregon as a 12 seed. So you got two Power 5 conferences in the 12-5 game in the South region, and you got two non-Power 5 conferences of the 2-5 seed in the West region. Why not put Murray State against Wisconsin and then put Oregon against Marquette? So now you got Marcus Howard against a Pac-12 team and Dana Altman, and then you've got Ja Morant against Wisconsin.
I'll sell them out. Bet you they'll end up to see this one.
I think it makes more. The longer you can have star players in the tournament, the better the tournament.
What the tournament's there for, though? The tournament's there to reward you for your season, so you get the higher seeds based off of what you do during the season. If you're more worthy of a 1 seed or a 2 seed, like it's built for that, and they try to kind of keep it semi-correct in terms of geography. It's just like, does the NCAA tournament, when you think of things it is lacking, is storylines ever one of them? Because inevitably you get the first round upsets and Cinderella becomes one. You get the stories you always hear of either the walk-on or the guys that almost quit playing basketball entirely that are leading their team to the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8 or whatever it might be. Or you have the coach that got fired from 2 jobs and now he's at some mid-major in Philadelphia and he's leading them to the Elite 8. Like, there's always those stories. And I think that it's like, especially in this sport, where, yeah, there's a small number of people who are diehard, passionate college basketball fans, but the majority of people who watch college basketball, maybe they tune into a game here or there during the regular season, but for the most part, it's, all right, conference tournaments are starting, I'm really going to start to dive into this, and the NCAA tournament, I'm fully on board for. They don't know what the heck's going on for the most part between who might be a third overall pick in a draft and almost all of that.
Listen, I see what you're saying. You're right. There's storylines every year, and people are saying, hey, don't call the Big East a non-Power 5. Listen, I went to a Big East school. I love the Big East. I know that it's a good basketball conference and all of that. I am simply saying that this year, if you were going to do a ranking of players who are going to be stars in this tournament, outside of the 1 seeds, right? Outside of Michigan State's point guard, outside of Zion Williamson, outside of Luke May, outside of the biggest names at the best schools, Marcus Howard and Ja Morant would be on any top 5 list, right? Ja Morant gets comped to Russell Westbrook. Marcus Howard gets comped to and Chris Dunn by Jeff Goodman, and Marcus Howard gets comped to, oh, he's a part of the Steph Curry influence on the game. He plays like Trae Young and that sort of thing. I just don't get why you would want one of those guys to for sure be eliminated on the first day of the tournament. I don't get that. I think maybe they would play against another team and they would lose and they'd be eliminated anyway, and then we wouldn't get to see them play head to head. I get that that's the gamble. This way it locks in that you get these two great one-on-one basketball players playing against each other. But to me, I would separate them so that they'd have a chance to play as long as possible. You become a star when you're Steph Curry and you make a run at Davidson to the Elite Eight.
Did the tournament do okay the next year when Steph Curry was playing in the NIT?
Yeah, it was fine.
Okay, just checking.
I want the best of it, though. It's not about this isn't about, it's not binary. It's not the tournament either survives or fails, depending on whether or not they take these types of advice.
I don't think it's always about the stars. Like, you get the guys that turn into, you see their draft stock skyrocket because of the tournament. Tyrus Thomas in this town was a perfect example of that. You didn't know who Tyrus Thomas was at the start of March that year. Then all of a sudden, the Bulls are giving up the rights to LaMarcus Aldridge in order to bring Tyrus Thomas in and be their high ceiling guy that's supposed to change the direction of a franchise. He bombs out and turns into a disastrous draft pick for them. Like, it's, you get those stories no matter what. And I don't think, like, the, because a guy is a star during the regular season, like, when I look at that part of it, like, that develops as the tournament goes on. By the time you get to the Elite Eight, by the time you get to the Final Four, it's, all right, maybe your megastars, maybe your top 5 or top 7 picks, a good chunk of them are eliminated. But then you have the, oh, how much has this guy moved up? Oh, when Butler went to the championship game, how much did Gordon Hayward's stock move up to be in from a guy that
right.
went to a school that has a good story to, oh, that might be a real player in the NBA, like type of thing. Like those happen almost every year.
Right, so you're saying the storylines develop organically.
Storylines develop, and also like your draft prospects and whatnot develop as well. Like you'll have a guy or two at the end of this tournament that maybe isn't like a fringe first round pick. Maybe that's a bit extreme, but you'll have that guy that stock just soars of, oh my God, did you see what so-and-so did? Did you see the run that, I don't know, just pick any real team out there. Did you see this run that Kansas State went on and got to the Elite Eight and all of a sudden, like, one of the players from there turns into top 10, top 12 pick type thing.
I'm with you. It will happen organically. The tournament never lacks for storylines. I'm just saying, if people agree that it's not a mistake that Louisville and Minnesota are paired up in the round of 64, why not go all in on things like that when you're not worried about, I'm not talking about changing seating. Syracuse and Washington, small example. But Mike Hopkins was the heir apparent to Boeheim for 25 years, played for him. They have too much respect for each other to actually schedule a game against one another in the regular season. If the tournament put 8-seed Syracuse against 9-seed Washington and you were able to sell that storyline on Selection Sunday, I can tell you this, not people in Washington and Syracuse are watching it anyway, but that's an interesting storyline. You know, mentor against mentee. Baylor against Syracuse, nobody cares. Washington against Utah State, nobody cares. When Missouri and Kansas separated, when Missouri went to the SEC, there was a year where KU was a 1-seed, Missouri was an 8-seed, but they didn't have the opportunity to play in the round of 32. They separated for some reason. That's silly. This year, K-State could play Oregon. You get the Dana Altman K-State connection. That's awesome. Kansas can play North Carolina in Kansas City in the Sweet 16 with the KU-Roy Williams connection. That's cool. Now, it's completely ridiculous that KU gets to play in Kansas City instead of K-State when K-State won the Big 12 and KU didn't. So K-State has to go to California and play UC Irvine, where Irvine's 4 hours away from the site in the first round as a 13 seed. K-State, everyone's talking about Michigan State, understandably, because it's Izzo and they got a shot to win it all. K-State got screwed with their geographic draw. They beat KU. They won the Big 12 share of it with Texas Tech. They don't get Kansas City for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, and they got to go out west and play a 13 seed who's a four-hour drive away when they're a four-hour flight away. That's a tough geographic draw for Bruce Weber and K-State. And, oh yeah, by the way, their best players hurt. Don't love K-State's chances of advancing this year. But I just, all I'm saying is, in general, we get these things where it's like, oh, it's really cool that Coach K can meet up with Johnny Dawkins in the round of 32. There's more of those. Just do them. Just acknowledge that it's a TV show. Coming up next, by the way, this is an anniversary of the last time that I cried over sports. We're going to talk about it on The Score.
Hey, Mikey, we like it.
Not a huge surprise, but clearly one of the great comebacks since Burt Reynolds' hairline. It came in a two-word statement, which is now just begging to have a Nike campaign built around it. Quote, unquote, I'm back. That's all Jordan said on Saturday. That was really all Jordan needed to say as his 17-month retirement came to an end. He will be back on Sunday when the Bulls play the Pacers, and probably not so coincidentally, the game is on national TV. The Bulls arrived in Indianapolis on Saturday night, and while Michael Jordan was not on the team charter, he will be there by game time, and that makes Phil Jackson happy.
We're all very happy about this.
Michael Jordan had David Falk facts. I'm back. Two-word statement. Last time I cried about sports. Tears of joy. You guys cry? What was
the
your reaction?
Net? No, November 2nd, 2016 is the last time I cried over sports.
You cried when the Cubs
tears
won?
Tears of joy, yes.
I did not.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tears I was happy. I got goosebumps. Is. I got chills.
It wasn't like bawling, but it definitely teared up.
You did? Okay.
Yeah.
Good for you. That's much more recent. I was 9 years old. I've wanted to cry.
Danny, you cry when the Sox won it all?
I did, yeah.
Good for you guys.
You have a heart, huh?
Yeah, I do actually, believe it or not. All it takes is for my team to win a World Series, so I don't anticipate crying again in my lifetime. But I did cry on that night in 2005. But as far as the Jordan thing goes, put it into White Sox perspective. The MLB strike from 94-95 had not been resolved yet. So when Jordan announced that he was coming back, that was like everything in my sports world. That made everything better because, you know, it's not like, you know, the strike was resolved and teams were at spring training. It hadn't been resolved yet until April. And that previous summer, my family booked a trip to go to Toronto to see the 94 Sox play the Blue Jays, and they went on strike that weekend. So that was a pretty rough sports time for me. So, like, to have Jordan come back in 95, that was huge.
Yeah, well, because I remember... So I remember that it was on a weekend. I couldn't remember if it was Friday or Saturday, so it's a Saturday. And the game was on Sunday against the Pacers. And I remember wearing the Jordan jersey to school on Monday, and everyone was wearing a Jordan jersey. And then it was like, okay, it's now he's wearing 45, and there was the rush to get the 45s, and that was a huge thing. And there had been the rumors that he was practicing and what he was doing. And, you know, Sam Smith was writing about it, and Casey Johnson was covering the Bulls, and it was just like, okay, they're practicing? Jordan's at the Berto Center? Is he just working out? What's he doing? Is he actually going to come back? And I was a kid, so I, you know, when they didn't win it in 94, I was like, I thought it was a birthright that the Bulls would win a championship. And then obviously they didn't win it that year, and he wasn't completely himself, but a few games into it, he had the double nickel in the Garden and was back, but just the absolute joy of Jordan returning and being relevant and feeling like, okay, yeah, that was 45 Mike. 45 Mike was good. 45 Mike was special. 45 Mike, you knew it was going to be great again. But when he came back then the next year and he was pissed about getting eliminated that year, and that's the 95-96 season, and they go 72-10, and he just blitzes through the league. It's like, okay, now the real Mike is back. But that was probably among the most purest form of happiness that I had as a child when Michael Jordan was returning. And then, if thinking about it, I wouldn't have really remembered as much. I've read the books and watched all of the movies and DVDs and stuff like that. But if Jordan hadn't come back and had that second three-peat, I wouldn't have had as many actual memories, because I don't have too many physical memories of the first three-peat where I can claim that they were actively my memories. I've watched all the games, I've read all the stuff about it, but I don't know that they were actually my memories. I have actually my memories from the second three-peat. So it was like a formative thing for my childhood.
I think the I'm Back Sun Times back page newspaper, I think that was like what started my Bulls hoarding of anything in print media, collecting anything that had Bulls or Jordan on it. I think that I'm Back was like the first thing I ever grabbed and like saved forever. And then every championship along, I think I saved every actual newspaper from the 72-10 season.
Every single edition?
Every time they won, like save the paper from the following day. Every magazine cover that had the Bulls on it. Yeah, that kind of was a springboard of that hoarding, that obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, man. I mean, like I didn't save every newspaper, but I have a t-shirt with that screen print of the Sun-Times cover, I'm Back, on it. And I definitely have newspapers from the championships and the Sports Illustrateds and the 70th win, because I was at that game at the Bradley Center in Milwaukee. I have some Wheaties boxes and Jordan cards. And
of course you were there.
I know. Hey, man, I've told that story before. That was a fluke.
What I remember about that night, I think I got an F on my report card in science, and I just remember it was supposed to be one of the great nights of my young life, but then just getting screamed at by my parents and teacher on report card pickup night. So I'll always remember that part of it.
That sucks. My older brother, he's significantly older, and my dad's family grew up in Wisconsin, so he was a Bucks fan. And so for Christmas that year, he's like, we'll do a big brother, little brother trip to the Bulls game at the end of the season in Milwaukee. And so we bought the tickets. And then it just happened to work out that was for win number 70. So, yeah, my brother and I were at that game, and there was the chopper following the bus as they would drive up north. And it was all over all the national news stories. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm going to this game. What, Shep?
Yeah, just the silliness that there was, the choppers chasing the bus and everything with all that. Like, my memory from that was being in fourth grade and taping the game And I remember telling my friends at school, I taped the game last night where they won 70 and they got by the Bucks. That's going to be worth money one day. Long before you had any idea that, you know, the internet was about to take over the world and things like YouTube would make that readily available for anybody that wants it. That was my plan in fourth grade, to go straight to the top in terms of having something. It was going to be like my very expensive baseball card, but instead in VHS form. And I don't think anyone would give $2 for that right now.
But every kid did that. Every kid had their...
Well, that's the thing too, yeah.
Their card collections. We all were like, oh, we're going to make money like our parents, but we're going to do it off of our Beanie Babies, our Michael Jordan cards, our Sports Illustrateds, our recordings of games. All of those markets crashed, just like Pogs. It's terrible. None of it's worth any money. But then you randomly see like a Michael Jordan card with the metallic insert that sells for $400K. I'm telling you, I got to go back to my parents' house and go into storage somewhere and find my old basketball cards and see if I have that Jordan card. I know I don't have a rookie card, but what if you just had a $400,000 basketball card sitting in a box in a basement somewhere and you didn't even know it?
That'd be a nice find. Like, it makes me like whenever I go home and parents are like, all right, take something back with you or throw something out. Like, I always, one, because it's actually fun to do. Like, the one thing that's fun to go through is the old baseball cards. And be like, who am I going to find today that I didn't understand was good at the time or whatever it is? And it's like, oh, yeah, this guy was great. And the card's worth 3 cents.
Should have sold at the peak of the market.
Right.
It's bad. Being bad investors. It's like, oh, it's sentimental. It'll appreciate with age. Now, it didn't. Now it's just a piece of paper that is totally worthless. But I was buying those Becketts. How much is this worth? Like, this is my net worth. This is my retirement, so I don't have to work like my parents. I'm going to retire on Michael Jordan cards and Sammy Sosa. I was really critical of Jim Boylan, and it seems like there might be signs of progress. I wonder if it's mea culpa time. We'll get into it coming up on The Score.